Thank you, and good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be with you again. And as I already indicated, my mind is a little bit all over the place, and I had planned this one story, and then I totally forgot about it, and because I got onto other things in my mind. But it all started with the scroll here. You know, this is part of our Lenten journey in the wilderness. And what's one of the things that took place in the wilderness? Does anybody know? They roamed around. What?
Temptation.
Okay, temptation, the Ten Commandments. Anything else? Manna, the golden calf, complaints. The wilderness was this huge, huge experience, right? And now, Jesus, after he was called God's beloved, he had 40 days in the wilderness, and he was tempted by Satan, as we can see. This particular Sunday was called to focus on the Ten Commandments in that wilderness experience. And for me, immediately, I felt like it's a symbolic importance, right? Because you're in the wilderness, but God is saying you are not alone, right? But now a problem starts to happen for me, because in this culture, in this context, we talk about law and order. And we often hear, we need more laws. Other people say we need less laws, right? And there's a battle. But what's the issue with law? Somebody, yeah. And who has to withhold the law? That's the thing. The lawmakers have to withhold it, you know, but often they're the ones who don't. And just so you know that I'm not telling the truth, you know, one time in Ivory Coast, I came to a corner, and the corner rounded like that and went down the hill. And it was a corner that I went through a couple times a day, or at least several times a week. And it's not a stop, right? So I go around the corner, and immediately the police flag me and call me over. They'd been doing this to a bunch of cars. They were all lined up. So I had to wait 5 or more minutes before they got to me. And they said, you didn't respect the stop. Like, I gave them all my papers first and so forth. And then they started to walk out over with my papers. I said, hold it. What's the deal? Why am I stopped? Well, you didn't observe the stop sign. You know what I did? I jumped out of the car. And I said, show me the stop sign. And he, what? And I started walking up the hill, looking for the stop sign. And I wasn't walking slowly. I was storming up the hill. So I was out of line as far as it was concerned. But it had been a rough day. And the last thing I needed was this. And so I'm storming up the hill, and the one police officer that's up the hill that signaled me to pull over in the first place, he yells down to this guy and he says, what's this guy doing? And he says, he wants to see the stop sign. And the other guy comes rushing over and he says, you see this white paint on the road? That's where the line used to be. He didn't even pretend that it was there, but you could see little bits of paint there where a line used to be. And I said, okay, so where's the stop sign? And he said, oh, the neighbors took it. By that time, I was more than hot, you know? So I'm very argumentative now. And I'm saying, so how can you stop me for not stopping at a stop sign when there is no stop sign. The stop sign's only in your mind. You know? Well, of course, by that time, I had to give up, right? Because they're not going to give me my driver's license back or anything like this. So I said, okay, what do I need to get my license back? What do I need to do to pay the fine? And they wrote it up quickly, and they said, you can pay it tomorrow. Come by tomorrow, and you'll get your papers. So, you know, acceptance had kicked in. But here, who were these people? These were the people that were being paid to uphold the law, right? But the indicators of the law were not there. And we have lots of times where what happens, I mean, I won't say all of us, but many of us, when we see the sign says 65, how fast do we go? 70 safely, and that's the qualifier. 70 safely, maybe 72. Yeah, 74. So we all have this thing about the law, you know. Oh, that's against the law. But so is a lot of stuff we do is against the law. We're always stretching the law. We're always going like this, say, yeah, the law says this, but, you know, it really means, you know. And so we've got a problem. We have this real issue, in a sense, with saying, well, we're a Bible-believing church. We believe in the Ten Commandments, right? You know, there are lots of churches that say that. But the thing is, as soon as you say, start going down the thou shalt nots, you realize that there are lots of us are shalling rather than shalt not, right? You know, we're always negotiating with the law. And so as the more I was reflecting on this, I said, why is it that we don't start with the Beatitudes? You know? Because, you know, what Jesus said, he summarized the law in such a way that he talked about it as the way that this song did, you know? He talked about the law as something that we do, not that we refrain ourselves from. So Jesus looked at things differently than law as thou shalt not. So if we look at the Beatitudes, and we take this as sort of the prime example of and Jackie's reading was Jesus's summation of the law, right? Love your neighbor as yourself, and so on and so forth. And we know that in Luke, when the young man comes and approaches Jesus on this story and so forth, Jesus responds by giving stories. And who is the neighbor to, you know, who's the one that's like the young man wants to argue with Jesus about who is my neighbor and so forth. But Jesus gets around that, you know? He looks at it when we think about where do we see Jesus's simplest teaching, we look at the Beatitudes. And the thing is, people rarely talk about the Beatitudes. I've heard very, very few sermons on the Beatitudes. Yet, it's one of the longest sections of teaching that Jesus has. So let's look a little bit at the Beatitudes. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain. After he sat down, his disciples came to him, and he began to speak and taught them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And there's debate whether in spirit is actually there or if that was a later addition. So it could have been blessed are the poor, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. It says, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. And then he goes into this story, salt and light. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything, but is thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. People do not use a lamp and put it under the bushel basket. Rather, they put it on the lampstand and give light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that when they may see your good works, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. Now, what strikes you about the Beatitudes? Is there anything in particular when you just hear them read again, and then especially when he summarizes things in talking about salt and light, how do you receive that? It's positive. It's positive. Whereas we said with the law, it was negative. Thou shalt not, right? I mean, it starts out, and if we would have read it from Exodus 20, it starts out with positive statements from God. But then it's, you shall have no other gods before me, you know. So it becomes a negative. It turns into these negative statements. You shall not. Anything else? It's positive. What else is it? Instructive. Yeah, it's how to, and what does it? So it's how to in two ways, right? Because it says, blessed are the poor, and there's a consequence, or there's an explanation. So it says, why are the poor blessed? You know, you hear that and you say, you know, I can see the grumbling in the crowd. How are we blessed? I don't understand. Sorry, I sort of jumped over, but it's one of those debates in terms of translation. In the earliest documents, in spirit is not there. And saying poor, mourn, meek, hunger, there's a certain symmetry there. And some commentaries argue that at some point in spirit was added because it just was asking for interpretation. So for me, sometimes I say in spirit, sometimes I don't, you know, thank you for pointing that out. But the point of it is that Jesus is focusing on positive ways of being, right? So blessed are the poor in spirit. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean financially poor. Does it mean humble? Does it mean that see themselves as are not boastful? You know, there's a lot of room for understanding of what that means. And that's why I think some translate or some writers might have added in spirit. But the point is, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who mourn, blessed are those who are meek. So what does this, what kind of picture does this paint of who we are called to be?
A blessed people.
Okay, a blessed people. Sheep, okay. And we could all share examples of that.
That way you're efficient.
Yeah, this is one place where it shows that no matter the context, it's we're called to be a certain way in the world, you know? We're called to be a certain presence in the world, not simply people that hide themselves in a salt shaker, right? If we're salt, we're to be distributed. If we're light, it's to shine. And our shining is coming out of, it sort of goes back to the very first week here on Advent, when Jesus's motivation, in a sense, is demonstrated as being coming out of that relationship with God of being beloved. So when Jesus starts talking about blessed are these people, and they're people that are not necessarily seen as the ones who are of highest value in society, right? So Jesus takes these different peoples and these different attitudes, these different ways of being, and then he says, it's in this way that you are to be salt and light, right? And as we know, salt is kind of an invisible presence, but it's everywhere, you know? And light, too. We don't see light, but we see that light strikes something. And when it strikes something, we see what it struck. So that's the nature of light, is to radiate out so that things can be seen. So salt becomes integrated in and it becomes a savor, right? Light is the same way. It's what highlights everything around us. So the invitation, as we think about this time of Lent, is for us to be salt and light. And how do we do that? Well, we ground ourselves in our awareness that we are beloved of God, and that God blesses. God's desire is to bless all peoples, wherever they are on the spectrum of their self-understanding in a lot of ways. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are the merciful. It's these things that we're not calculating. We're making peace. We might be persecuted, but the end game is that we receive the kingdom of God. So in order to stay in a better time frame, I'm going to leave it there. Okay.